It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. Did you know that your five senses influence what you do and what you buy? For years, marketers have been experimenting with the senses and sensory experiences to create better perceptions of the products that they sell to you. Even with a product as simple as a potato chip, there are many factors that go into the experience of interacting with the chip itself. How it tastes, how it smells, the sound that eating it makes, and the appearance of its packaging can all influence our perception of the potato chip itself. As scientists and managers begin to recognize the importance of the senses in product design and marketing, more and more products and advertisements have become sensory in nature. What changes can be made in the packaging, branding, and advertising to captivate your senses? What changes can be made to the products themselves? Our guest, Dr. Aradhana Krishna, professor of marketing at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan and author of the new book, Customer Sense, How the Five Senses Influence Buying Behavior, joins us live to tell us how. Good morning, Dr. Krishna.
Good morning, Dave.
Nice to have you with us today. First, you know, how do you define what sensory marketing is?
The way I've defined it is as follows. I say that it's marketing that engages consumer senses and affects their perception, judgment, and behavior. So it's about subconscious triggers that make one like a product and buy it. So in this instance, it's not the marketer who is advertising and telling consumers that their product is better or softer or more tasty. So the product is doing it directly.
Directly with the consumer and just in engaging them in some way.
Yeah, that's right.
What is the best way to approach sensory marketing from a business that's promoting a product? Where do they start?
So one thing that they can do to start off is firstly try to understand ways in which the product may be sensorially appealing already. So, for example, you take a product and say, is there something about the product which is really good from the perspective of just the aesthetic appeal, the visual appeal, the way the packaging is, the color, the design? You know, does it have something about its smell which is very memorable? You know, so for example, like the Play-Doh smell is so memorable. You smell Play-Doh
sure
when you are 35 years old and you are just brought back to the classroom and you can relive all those memories just with that very identifiable, unique smell. Or it could be something about the sound. So there is something about either a jingle associated with the product or the sound the product makes itself. So there can be ways in which the product can be engaging. And first you have to figure out, is there something that you're already doing and doing it well? And then the next step would be to see, is there something you can do better?
Right, because some of these brands already have some brand value to them, and regardless if it's the logo or the, as you said, the commercials that run that support the marketing efforts, some of these things already have enough of a brand value in the marketplace. So how do you take what has already been established and then build on top of that?
Yeah, that's right. So there are so many different examples one can think of. So one example that I have given often when I have been asked the question of, you know, who's done it well, is the example of the Hershey's Kiss, which I find fascinating. So there was the basic milk chocolate that Hershey's had, you know, which sold for, you know, a reasonable price for a basic milk chocolate. And then they take the same product and change the shape so that it looks like a, you know, sort of like a teardrop. They change the name. It's called the Kiss, which makes it sound much more romantic and appealing.
Sure.
There is a package which you unfurl like a little flag, and it looks like a present. It's small in size. So when you ask people their attachment to the Hershey's Kiss, they seem to be much more engaged with it compared to a basic milk chocolate. So it's the same product, but in terms of the design itself. So the product, when you put it on the tongue, it feels very different. So the haptic sensation of the Hershey's Kiss on your tongue becomes different to that of the milk chocolate because of the shape. So it's not just the chocolate itself, it's also the shape which is affecting how you feel about it, how it tastes.
Well, not only that, but because of how it's shaped, when you bite on it in your mouth, you know, with the tip on there, it just feels different. So it creates a whole different experience with a familiar flavor that you grew up with.
Absolutely.
We were talking a little bit as in the introduction about the potato chip. You know, tell me, is something as simple as a potato chip, how, you know, there's so many different types that are out there. And I have my favorites. You know, I love the kettle chips and the Cape Cod kettle chips because really I like the way they feel. I like the way they taste. And I like the crunch. What is different about the chip from manufacturer to manufacturer that makes it so unique?
Much more complicated than one would think.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting example. So one thing that people have done research on, which concerns the chip, is about how the sound affects freshness. So what the researchers have shown is, so they took consumers and they put them in booths with headphones on their head, and they made them eat potato chips. Now, half these consumers were hearing sounds which were louder. So it was supposed to be sound which was them biting into the chip, but some of these sounds were amplified, whereas some were not. And what was interesting was that consumers who heard the louder sounds felt that the chips were fresher. So
I feel the same way, too. I think as a consumer that, you know, if you find something that's a little chewy, I'm thinking it's stale at that point.
Right, but this is just from the sound.
Right.
Over here, so it's what is interesting is they might be just as crisp in actuality, but when just because the sound is louder, you feel that it is crisper.
All right, so one of the other examples that you've cited is the Intel Pentium chip. Tell me a little bit about that.
So that's a very interesting example, Dave. So so there are some product components which, you know, go into the final product, which the consumer may never be aware of. And so I think Intel has been extremely smart in the way they have managed to make their chip visible to the consumer. So typically nobody would know that there was the Intel Pentium chip inside the computer, but
right,
because of their signature sound, so when you open up your computer and you hear the very recognizable sound of the Intel Pentium chip, it's telling you it's Intel inside. So people have recognized the fact that Intel is a high-quality Pentium chip, and it's built a brand equity from that.
There's a couple other things that I had noticed when I was traveling this week. Expedia has a new app that is out there, and it's been updated. And so when I can start checking into my flight, I hear the kind of doorbell sound that you hear when the flight is about to take off and they tell you to fasten your seatbelts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That is the sound that came out of my phone to alert me that this is related to travel and that I should look at my phone. I mean, I couldn't figure out exactly what the tune was at first,
right,
but I associated it with air travel. And I've never heard it before, and it's the first time that I set up for alerts. So here is something where they're trying to connect me to their brand while I'm traveling with them, and now they've created an experience for me that now I'm going to expect that when I need to log into my flight.
I think that's a brilliant idea. And so an old example which is similar to that and especially and related to travel as well is Singapore Airlines. So one of the earliest examples people give for signature smells is that of Singapore Airlines. So they had a particular smell, which was Floridan waters, and then they had the smell sprayed in the laundry for the stewardesses. They had it in the flight. They had it in the lounges, and it was very subtle. So, I mean, if somebody was to ask you, can you smell something, many humans would say, you know, we don't really smell anything. But it was, just above threshold of detection. But the thing was, the Singapore Airlines experience was fantastic, and people started associating it with that smell. And so later on, people felt that when they smelled that particular smell, they automatically started feeling more relaxed. And so now I'm finding it interesting that Expedia is trying to do something similar with the doorbell sound. And I think it's a great idea because you'll start associating travel, so not just Expedia. So if they manage to have people associate travel with Expedia, they might get more people moving towards Expedia for travel.
Sure. And you're mentioning just about the smells and so forth. Now, it's been around for, you know, 40, 50 years that you'd walk into a department store and they would spray cologne or perfume around to get you in the mood of those areas. Abercrombie and Fitch has done that for years. In fact, it's a little overwhelming sometimes when you pass by the store. You smell that cologne coming out. You smell like it, actually, as you leave the store. But a lot of retailers that are out there are using the sense of smell, and they're spraying like a air deodorizer into the air. You know, in the fall, you might have cinnamon apples being sprayed into a store. You might have something that has more of a cedar scent. Depending on what they sell in the store, that is becoming just as big as well, is creating that experience, not only visually in the store, but a sense of smell as well.
You know, it's interesting that you bring it up. So the one sad thing that has happened with sensory marketing is people haven't delved into it in a very sophisticated way tend to think of sensory marketing as being smell marketing. So they think of spraying smells in the air as doing sensory marketing, and they're not really exploring the other senses. And especially with smell, I think sometimes people don't think enough about what they're doing. So in department stores, people need to be more careful than they are right now. So it's very difficult to separate smells between departments. So a smell which might be consistent with one department could be completely inconsistent with another, and it's very difficult to separate them. So and also overwhelming smells may be very unappealing to lots of people. So in that sense, you know, so Abercrombie and Fitch might be very appealing to a certain population, and it could be the population which they're attracting, which is fantastic, but it could be very unappealing to other segments. And in department stores, when you have departments mixed up, so you can have a perfume department, but very close to that, you can have, you know, the men's clothing department.
Sure.
Then the question is, are the smells going to go across? And if you're moving between departments, what does it do to you?
Well, housewares, too. So they could be doing a grilling demonstration. So you're now smelling food with perfume. I could see how that could be confusing. What I find really interesting in all this, though, you know, the idea that with more of life being virtual, so we've all got, you know, we're all kind of stuck in this new electronic world of iPads and iPhones and your laptops and everything else. There's not as much personal interaction. And I almost think that the sensory stimulation that some of these manufacturers and retailers are doing are going to become more important because it promotes that social interaction that we're not getting anywhere else right now.
So, you know, in terms of shopping in the virtual world, there's some experimentation going on right now. So clearly you have the visual and you have the sound, but the haptic people are experimenting on. So people are trying to see if they can create a device which can be attached to the laptop. And when you put your hand on the device, it can sort of replicate the haptic feel of the product. So you can get the texture and you can, you know, get the hardness reflected in that device. So, but this is still being researched. And something similar is being done for smell, but smell is, I think, in, you know, much tougher to replicate. So people are trying to see if somehow a product can say, okay, now you go to that device and this is the code you press in and this is the spray which will be emitted from the device, which will try to replicate the smell that you would have if you were in a physical store. But smells are very difficult to replicate with in a standard device because there are just so many smells out there.
It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to Dr. Aradhana Krishner. She's a professor of marketing at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan and author of the new book, Customer Sense, How the Five Senses Influence Buying Behavior. So we've talked a little bit about smells and sounds. What exactly is a visual sensory signature?
A visual sensory signature can be brought about in many ways. So one which people would be very familiar with is color. So one example of color is the Tiffany's robin blue. So you see the box with this blue color, the robin's egg blues stands out, and it is something which ladies start really wanting. They want that box with that robin's egg blue. And Tiffany is very careful to use that blue sparingly, never to give away the box unless you have bought a product from them. So they really treasure the signature that they have created, because that is clearly connoting luxury, romance, love, and it's become a very precious color.
Funny you say that, because there is a Tiffany blue that is similar to it. It is not exactly. That became very trendy a couple years ago for paint in the home. So, you know, whether you're painting your dining room or your bedroom and so forth, that all of a sudden became the hot paint. And I have to imagine that was totally associated with Tiffany's.
I would expect so. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So visually, you know, there is there's the color fascination, but there's also patterns, too. And when you think about packaging and the way things are packaged from brand to brand, that's always something that's always recognizable as well.
Right. So I mean, actually, there is an example of color which I find fascinating, and a second one which I'd like to bring up. Mm-hmm. So I've always been fascinated by how Susan G. Komen has managed to own pink. I would say, like, own pink. So within the U.S., in October, if you see anything that is pink, you automatically assume that there is something going on for raising money for breast cancer. So I think they've done a tremendous job in associating the pink color with a non-profit and a fundraising activity, which is completely different from the brand world. So that's an example which I find really amazing. So that's another one on color. In patterns, we have so many. We've got Louis Vuitton, which you know, you see on bags all over the place. Mm-hmm. Then in packaging, we've got shapes of perfume bottles. So we've got Jean-Paul Gaultier, who has these very interesting bottle shapes for perfume, and you can make out right away that this is a Gaultier bottle. So there are many ways in which you can create visual signatures for your product.
Absolutely. Well, there's also the right on Michigan Avenue down the street here, there's a Burberry store, and they have that plaid signature that not only they use on all their products and all their apparel and their handbags and so forth, but it is also on their bags, but it's now also on the building. So now you completely look at that building, and very recognizable without even seeing the name of the building, you have that on there. But there's a lot more simple things, too, that are out there, I mean, that are so recognizable. And I know we're talking a little bit more brand, but it's still a visual sensory, is recognizing that Target logo, recognizing that light that comes up for the Walmart logo, the McDonald's signal. All you see is those M's on a bag or a cup or any product, and you know it's a McDonald's. The visual part of it is absolutely just as much as important as the other senses as well.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, I'm sure that if you took little kids and took them past a McDonald's and they saw that M, they would know it's a McDonald's.
Oh, yeah, before they could read.
Before they can read, they'll say that's a McDonald's.
True.
But you're absolutely right.
Yeah, my little kids, man, they've been able to recognize brands, again, without even being able to read, you know, at 3 years old or just jumping into 4 years old. They recognize based on color, based on pattern, and based on logo. So absolutely an interesting experience. Why is there all this growing interest now, do you think, from marketers in sensory marketing in general?
So one reason for that, and that's the big reason for it, is there is so much advertising clutter right now. There's so much marketing clutter. There are thousands of brands for so many products. And it is difficult for a single brand to stand out. So a marketer can go hoarse trying to convince a customer by advertising that, look, we are better in so many different ways. Our product is fantastic. Because when the consumer is reading an ad, they know it's coming from the marketer. And they're saying, you know, obviously the marketer is going to say that. So there is some skepticism at the consumer level. So firstly, there's all this brand clutter. So does your ad even get seen? Mm-hmm. And then there is this skepticism that, of course, they're trying to convince me it's better. So if the product is speaking for itself, so the consumer is making inferences on their own, so they are saying they are the ones who are making their inferences, it's not the marketer who's telling them what to believe, it becomes much more credible. And so it has a larger impact in how the consumer behaves.
Sure, absolutely does. Who's doing it right, in your opinion, and who's doing it wrong? Like, what are some examples of things that you see that you know the effort is being made for sensory, but it's just not working?
So there are two major things that I think that people are doing wrong. And so one thing is, so people know sensory marketing is important, but they seem to then go overboard. So then it's like, oh, there are five senses. Let me try to do everything. So then there'll be this sensory overload. They'll try to have a very powerful smell, then they'll have a very powerful sound, and then they'll have some kind of aesthetic appeal, and then they'll try to change how it feels. And they'll really have an overload so that the consumer is not going away with, you know, one message. So, you know, one example one can think of is, think about a food that you really liked. So typically in very high-end meals, there'll be one ingredient or two ingredients which really stand out. So if there's a whole amalgam of lots of spices which are unidentifiable, it's very difficult to say why you like something or even that you like it. So over here, I think what marketers need to do is say, what is it, which particular sense or maybe two senses that I really want to play with, to do what I really want to do. So it's not as if, you know, you just bombard people with the consumers on every sense and you'll do it right. That's exactly wrong. And lots of stores are trying to do this, which I find not the right thing to do.
And I don't think this is going to – I think this is just the beginning of a new relaunch of all the sensory marketing as well, as I said, because it promotes that social interaction that we're not getting today. What is the Sensory Marketing Lab? I found the sensorymarketinglab.com, which you are a significant part of. Explain that to us.
So this is a lab that I started. So I started getting a lot of calls from sensory marketing consultants and from companies and from researchers, and they were asking me to hold conferences to explain all the research on it, how it applies for companies, and to answer some of their questions. So the lab is actually a place where lots of research is going on. So there are lots of postdocs and graduate students who are working with me, and then companies can also ask us to look at, you know, some basic questions. So if there's something which is puzzling them, then they can ask for basic questions and see if we are interested in that research. And we are always looking for partner companies to come in and collaborate with us on research there.
Well, good deal. Well, you can find this interesting read, Customer Sense, How the Five Senses Influence Buying Behavior, at Amazon.com. And you can learn more about Dr. Krishna and what she does at sensorymarketinglab.com. Thanks, Dr. Krishna, for being with us here this early this morning.
Thanks, Dave.